So I don't think he's fully wrong. Like maybe stuff's going
No.
down at the Capitol that we don't necessarily know about, or there's some sort of cabal. Now I'm feeling like a conspiracy theorist, but
Hey
it
man, you
feels
go
true.
you read about MK Ultra, you will read about some fucked up shit as well. I
Well,
mean,
there's an opening in Washington in more ways
hey.
than one.
A big
Hey.
old opening.
Woo-hoo.
Horror Movie Survival Guide is a weekly podcast where I, Gorehound Julia Marchesi, delves into my horror movie notebook to corrupt another one of my longtime chums, Terry Gamble, who is hiding in the creepy horror closet.
My mission is to learn the gospel of horror movie survival and to incorporate Julia's wealth of wisdom to become a final girl disciple.
Join us as we take a deep dive into everything from OG horror
to newly released films,
but prefer the classics on VHS.
We'll talk about obscure details that no one else notices.
Spin off into alternate casting universes, crush on some dodgy, foxy fellows,
and creepy uncles, and arm ourselves with the knowledge necessary to become the final girl.
Hello out there. Welcome to Horror Movie Survival Guide. I am so excited, Julia. I'm like freaking out, actually very excited because we have not one but two guests on today. Can you believe it?
I am excited too. You can hear my voice quivering with excitement. One of my favorite people who I love very
Yes.
much, and one I have loved to hear about from said person because everything he says about it is great. So I cannot wait. Please.
Oh my gosh.
Introduce.
Oh my God. I'm so ready to introduce because we're kicking off, like, we have a whole round of collaborations happening this month. So, this is some of our favorite podcasters we're collaborating with all month. And today we have the amazing duo of from Midnight Mass Podcast. We have Peaches Freaking Christ and Michael Verratti. Welcome. Welcome.
Thank
welcome,
you.
Welcome.
Yes. Thanks for having
oh
us.
Oh my God. I mean, how could we not? Peaches, you are a filmmaker, a cult leader. Based out of San Francisco, and you've been, essentially been running your own church of cult for all these years through Midnight Mass Pod live events and now through the podcast. You've gone on tour. You have events that you featured some of our favorite directors like John Waters, Cloris Leachman, Patricia Quinn, Nell Campbell, Linda Blair, Bruce Campbell, Apollonia, holy goodness, Barry Bostwick, Pam Grier, and so many more. And Peaches has an alter ego, also known as Joshua Granell, who is the writer and director of the feature film All About Evil, the award-winning dark comedy gore film that stars one of Julia's favorites. I know this, Natasha Lyonne, Julia.
Yeah!
One of your favorite stars from But I'm a Cheerleader and Russian Doll. Also stars Thomas Decker, Cassandra Peterson, the
yeah.
Elvira, Mink Stoll, one of my favorite stars of John Waters films, and Peaches Christ herself as well. And Peaches has been featured in multiple films and documentaries. Welcome. And Michael Verratti. Michael, friend of our podcast and filmmaker, screenwriter of a bunch of indie horror flicks that we love and some of our favorite made for TV movies and Christmas movies that our moms love and I love because I basically am a mom. and he's also published many of your favorite horror publications and been in a avid collaborator with Peaches Christ for many years on her stage productions and with the Boulay Brothers for Dragula. So happy to have you back to the pod, Michael, and welcome Peaches Christ for your first chance at survival. Welcome, welcome, welcome
Thank
today.
Thank you.
Hey,
wow,
thank you
that
for
was
having
a wonderful introduction.
Do you
know,
feel fancy now?
I'm blushing under all this blush.
Oh, I just imagine pancake and layers. I love it so much, Peaches. Oh, my goodness. Like one of the most iconic faces on the planet. And I love how they tried to recreate your eyebrow in Dragula. My goodness.
Yeah, that was. That
and
was
to
something.
Varying success, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Very varying.
So welcome. So we want to talk with you about Midnight Mass and your podcast and how you guys got together and started making your show.
But I think we should start with the basics, right? We should start at the beginning.
Oh my God,
the genesis.
Julia, let's do that.
Genesis of where your love of horror started. Now, Michael, I know we've talked to you a little bit about this before with your last interview, but for those who have not heard, please let us know, like, when do you remember first becoming friends with horror?
Well, I first became friends with horror thanks to a program called USA Up All Night. It hosted by Rhonda Shearer and, of course, the late Gilbert Gottfried, who at the time of this recording just passed yesterday.
Oh.
My first foray was a late night screening of Attack of the Killer Tomatoes and Return of the Killer Tomatoes, which was hosted by Rhonda on said program. And I felt like my life was completely changed. It was like a baptism in blood and tomato juice, if you will. And by the next morning, I wanted to know everything about all these kinds of movies that I wasn't seeing at the multiplex or that my friends at school weren't talking about. And I was drawn to that forbidden allure, and that was it. I was off to the races, and from there, I wanted to consume everything. I wanted to see all the franchises and watch the late night movies and the misfit films, and I feel like I'm doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, I feel like your job is to direct people to the kind of movies they should be seeing that they aren't necessarily being seeing. Do you feel like even when you were younger, that was the case? Is you were the kid showing everybody the cool movies?
Oh, I was definitely the person who would troll the VHS aisles at the video store and like grab the weirdest titles. And my friends would be like, let's watch When Harry Met Sally. I'm like, sure, sure. Or we could watch The Mutilator. And they'd be like, what's that? And I'm like, you're about to find out. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah, the Corruptor. Yes.
Yeah, so that was me.
The slumber party. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and some were successful, some were not. I mean, you can only take three on a meat hook to a slumber party one time before you get, like, a revolution.
Yeah, yeah. and Peaches, what about you?
I was just, always into horror, so much so that I get asked this question so much that I've investigated with my family and went to my parents, a while ago and said, when did it start? When did this thing start? And they also were baffled. Like they were saying, is early as we can remember, you were just always into dark things, ghoulish things, Halloween, ghosts, horror movies, spooky things. And so with movies specifically, I remember watching Psycho, at a probably really young age, inappropriately young, and just being blown away by it. And even things like The Wizard of Oz, which as a kid I loved, but my favorite part of The Wizard of Oz was, of course, The Wicked Witch, So I don't know. I just always, it's always been in my DNA. And now I have a nephew who's 3 years old, and I have not, as much as people are accusing me of brainwashing this child, I have not interfered. And he is the same way I am. He's obsessed with anything spooky.
Ooh. So it's nature, not just nurture, kids. Oh yeah. My goodness.
Genetics.
It's super.
That's so great. You can bond with him so young.
Yeah. Yeah, he's obsessed with, my sister will, he'll want to FaceTime me, and my sister will FaceTime him, and he's always excited to see what spooky thing I have, in the background that I can show him. And the other thing that's hilarious lately is he must really understand drag, because any drag queen he sees on TV, no matter how different she looks from Peaches, he recognizes that they're drag queens, and he'll point and say, oh, look, Peaches.
That is the cutest thing I've ever heard. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh. Do you ever read to kids like drag reading, like library reading and stuff like that?
I have not. I actually, that to me, I've done a lot of disturbing things in drag. Many, ooh, many disturbing ooh things. But that to me might be the most disturbing. Like the idea of Peaches becoming family friendly enough to go into a library. I was raised on drag queens like Divine and Frankenfurter, even the fact that I do events now, like I'm doing a symphony event of horror music in Vancouver, I can't believe that Peaches has crossed over to these legitimate spaces. But the point where I become family friendly enough to entertain children is really maybe the time to retire.
But to be fair, it's not that you haven't done your fair share of reading.
I've done my fair share of reading, and I definitely am fine with, these conservatives who don't want kids to hear the word gay in Florida or whatever. It's like, it makes me want to go out and basically turn them all into little queers, So wherever I can, just indoctrinate and manipulate.
the gay agenda is alive and well.
Yes, I have exactly. Don't you keep them away from me, because if I'm within, you know, if they get near me, they're gonna turn gay. You know, that kind of thing. So
I'm gayer for having known you, Peaches. I can attest to it.
Aren't we all?
But I'll say this. My friend and a friend of our podcast, Michelle T, actually created the program for reading to children, literally drag queens going into libraries and reading to children. So it's not that far out of the question that I would do it. If Michelle called me and asked me to do it, I would do it.
Yeah. And for background, Michelle T is like a fabulous punk rock icon, yes, you know, of the underground. And so if you know anything about Michelle's background, she's a phenomenal author, but like just truly part of the underground scene of both coasts. And she had this idea. So that it sprung from her, of all people, is also kind of singularly amazing. And yes, that she's curated it over the years to become what it is really cool. And to know that it has punk rock roots, because let's face it, drag queens reading to kids in its own way is punk rock.
Very sure. I love that. That's amazing. So, Peaches, what is the first movie you can remember really relating to horror-wise?
Gosh, I mean, it probably is either, like, if it's just from a horror thing, I think, you know, probably my fascination with The Wicked Witch of the West is an early memory, which I know John Waters talks about that as well. I think a lot of us horror kids, you know, who end up loving horror, were turned on by The Witch, you know, as a kid. But yeah, I remember, you know, and in fact, I remember talking about slumber parties. I remember going to a kid's party at a really young age, and some sort of older sibling had the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yes, and none of the kids were that interested in it. I knew it was taboo. And so I remember seeing that, like me planting myself in front of the TV and just watching it, you know, gobsmacked.
Oh my God, how old were you?
How old? Yeah.
Young. I mean, like 9 or 10, you know.
Oh my God, no.
Yeah.
That movie breaks adults.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
10-year-old?
Oh, I was terrified.
Goodness.
Yeah, and I was terrified.
Well, how did you?
You know, I was like, I'm one of those horror kids who literally was terrified. Like I wasn't watching it going, you know, this isn't scary. Oh, no, no, no. I was completely scared, but somehow I loved it. Yeah.
It's still the scariest movie I've ever seen. Ever. Yeah. Like I hurt so bad after the first time I watched it, because I've been holding myself so tense for so long that like my body's just like aching. And I was like, oh my God, it's so good.
I relate to that as well. As far as a horror movie goes that was scary to me, but one that I loved and watched repeatedly as a child, it was Poltergeist. You know, that was very much, I think, because it's about children and it was about suburbia, and it was so fantastic. You know, it was that mix of horror and fantasy, and of course, you know, I look at it now and I'm like, oh my God, it's like pure camp, you know. But I loved Poltergeist.
Terry had a run-in with Poltergeist early in her life, didn't you, Terry?
Yeah, it broke me as well. I mean, it broke me. It wasn't the one I went back to a bunch. I remember seeing it at 5. And so, yeah, it was a little truly. It's PG, though. So it's like one of those things where, you know, it was on at my babysitter's house. And so there we go. And I saw it. And I was terrified that the TV was going to suck me in, but I couldn't stop watching the TV either. So, you know, what can you do?
Have you seen it since?
Oh, yeah. I've seen it quite a few times since. Okay. And then obviously Poltergeist 2, which was just a wonderful romp as well. But I love that that you went back to it and saw it as camp, though, Peaches. I'm curious, have you done an iteration? Because I know you do a lot of stage shows. Kind of like, have you done an iteration of Poltergeist?
Yes, I've done I've done it a few times. It's a stage show called Poltergeist.
Of course. Of course it is.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Can you talk a little bit more about like how you went from, you know, being a horror obsessive or cult obsessive to creating your stage shows and what the genesis was for that?
Sure. Well, I like a lot of these obsessions, I couldn't let them go. And so my obsessions with, you know, John Waters and Divine, with the Rocky Horror Picture Show, with horror movies.
These are obsessions I also have. This is why we should be best friends.
Yes. These were all, I mean, just total obsessions. And And when I moved to San Francisco in the mid-90s, as a young, young child,
You were a baby, weren't you?
I look back,
tiny little baby.
I look back on it now and I'm like, you know, I was very young. I mean, I wasn't a baby, but I did just graduate from college. And so I was in this really unique position to kind of arrive in a San Francisco pre-tech boom, so pre-billionaire takeover, when the city was still very much bohemian and very creative.
Yes.
And you could draw an audience of other creatives. So in those days, yes, we were, you know, I was doing these midnight movie events. That was really my attempt to mash up my love of performing as Peaches Christ, but also to be able to make movies and have an audience and to be able mm-hmm. to screen movies and celebrate movies. So I really, really selfishly, I created this event for myself in a way, which is kind of like everything I do now. My haunted attraction is like that. Like everything my movie in a way. But what's nice is you find out that you're not so unique, that there are these other weirdos who grew up being inspired by the same stuff you were and have the same obsessions. Mm-hmm. And luckily in San Francisco at the time, there were still enough weirdos that I could sustain doing a weekly midnight movie event for years and years and years.
How long were you Peaches before you started doing this, though? Because you said to continue being Peaches. How long were you performing in drag?
Well, I was... going to Penn State, where I was a film student, and at Penn State, there were not people doing drag at the time in central Pennsylvania. And so I was making a movie called Jizz Mopper. My senior thesis film was Jizz Mopper, a love story.
And,
so, a love story.
Yes, yes. It was a love story. And Peaches was actually born in that movie. So that was kind of out of necessity because I wanted a drag character in the movie, and the actor that we cast wasn't really into it, and you know, I had to get the movie made, and so I became Peaches in that film. But then I became Peaches Christ when I arrived in San Francisco, adding the Christ, kind of more defining the character, something horror and gothic and sacrilegious and political and punk rock and all those things that were much in the early days of Peaches were much more evident, like really on the surface, really overt. And so that was 1996, and then it was 1998 that I created Midnight Mass. So, but back then, I have to say, like, it doesn't sound like a lot of time, but when you're 22, 2 years is a long time, especially when you think of your drag career as being an expensive hobby, which is what it was mm-hmm. at the time. I wasn't making none of us. The only person making money doing drag was RuPaul back then. Yep. You know, she hadn't yet created the machine of Drag Race. So most of us who were getting into drag were not considering it a career choice. You know, it was an obsession.
And it sounds like you know, something that's fabulous about what you're doing is that you're getting rewarded for being the most you can be, right? You say it's selfish because you're creating these things that have your interest, but you find out other people have interest. And it's like, the more Peaches you can make it, the more people like it.
Yes, I think that's true. And I've found that to be true repeatedly. And it's why, you know, you get asked, and it's a very flattering question, but what advice would you give young people who want to, you know, get into this, whatever this is, whatever I'm being asked about? And I always kind of say, like, you know, what worked for me was just following what I was really excited about. And like, instead of trying to figure out what the trend was or what was popular, was just kind of, okay, does this excite me? Oh, good, let's do this, rather than you know, trying to figure out what was going to be successful. It was more just like staying true to the things that I was passionate about. And I think it works for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think that's great because cult is like evergreen, you know,
yes.
And the things that you've chosen are things that like do continue to have a resurgence in life and over and are reborn constantly. So, you know, being the one that's Peaches Christ has risen, I'm thinking right now as we're going into Easter.
Yes.
But you know, as things are being reborn over and over again through different eyes, I love that.
Yeah.
So Michael, where do you come into the Peaches Christ storyline?
Peaches and I first connected in the mid-thousands or maybe late thousands, and it actually does in some way tie all the way back to Rhonda Shear and USA Up All Night, because at the time I was living on the East Coast in the Pittsburgh area, And I was doing some writing for this horror movie magazine called Ultra Violent. And I was, you know, in the process of trying to create my own film career on the indie regional scene. But I also had, because of Rhonda, this longtime interest in late night regional horror hosts. And I was very ambitious, and I attempted to try and write a book about the history of late night horror hosts, which I have talked about many times. Never actually happened because it was way bigger a project at the time than I was ready to take on. I probably could do it now, but my life has moved into different directions. But at the time,
I need to read that book.
I would read that book too. I feel like it's maybe a documentary, but go on.
It's true. And there have been a few documentaries as well, but they're usually isolated to specific sections of the country. But while I was doing my research for this book and doing some light interviewing in prep to do the project, I was curious about what the natural progression of late night horror hosts had become, you know, because that had sort of died out by that point. There were still a few out there. Of course, Elvira is perennial. We still have Joe Bob Briggs. But in terms of the regional markets, they just weren't as consistent. And I started doing research and discovered that there was still sort of a rich tradition, albeit smaller, finding people like Mr. Lobo and Penny Dreadful. And then I stumbled upon the webpage of this drag queen in San Francisco who was hosting midnight movies. And I was like, well, if this isn't the natural progression of what that all is, I don't know what is. And so I sent an email to the email address on the webpage, and Joshua wrote me back. And I was like, I want to talk to you about this book. And we called each other on the phone, and I think it was very clear quite quickly that we were kindred spirits because, as Joshua said, it's finding those people who share this weirdo interest. You know, you find your people in this life. And I was like, oh, this is someone who loves all the things that I love. I love what they're doing. I'm interested in keeping up. We talked for much longer than what the interview would have been, and then we periodically kept up over the years. But not like frequently. And then when we reconnected really was when Peaches made All About Evil. Peaches had told me that she had made a feature film and was kind enough to invite me to attend the premiere. So I flew out to San Francisco to go see it. It was the first time we ever met in person.
That's amazing. Tell us about that night, please. I need to know details.
Yeah. Oh, and I think that is more of a Peaches question than me, but it was a phenomenal evening. I will say that.
Well, I would think we had two different experiences.
Yes.
Because,
as we all do.
Yeah, because, you know, obviously for me, oh my God, it was a wild, wonderful, you know, it was like a dream come true, you know, like,
right.
Obviously for Michael, it was a different experience because he was showing up and kind of in a way being introduced to this whole world for the first time that now you're such a big part of.
Yes. And so what happened while there, not only did I get to experience Peach's world like in full, but we spent time together. And one of the things that she revealed to me while I was visiting was this intention to take All About Evil on the road and do in various cities what she had been doing in San Francisco with Midnight Mass for all these years with her own movie. And she was going to do this rolling road show. And I was like, well, I want to be part of this. And luckily, you know, Peaches agreed. And we cooked up this idea that I would go on the road and document the whole thing. And so we hit the road together. Peaches, you know, had me join her. I wrote about all of these stops from Phoenix to New York to, you know, Atlanta and back again. And it was kind of like on the road and you know, in these strange situations that we forged our friendship. And
that
now
is like the best Jack Kerouac, Neil Cassidy combo alternate universe. I love it.
No. And, you know, I know that I wrote about this recently, which I'm sure Peaches will tell you about in a bit. But I wrote about how that summer really did change my life. It changed my life in a number of ways, but most importantly, it really forged a friendship that, you know, carries on and has developed into this really profound collaboration that I have with Peaches. We don't get very earnest on our own podcast all that often, so this is the moment you two get this.
I'm so glad.
it was so significant. And, you know, I have since moved to LA. I do have my own career in film, but a lot of the seeds that even that I do independently begin with all of that. And Peaches and I have grown as friends and as collaborators. We've written stage shows together. We've written movies together. We now, host the show weekly. We've done live events together. And, you know, it all began with a phone call because we both like the same movies, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's you never know what's going to be the thing that alters the course of your existence.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way to describe our collaborations, because I actually forget the genesis of, you know, how we met, and for me the gift of being Peaches Christ includes so many of these friendships, like, and actually chosen family. You know, when I think about Michael, mm-hmm. and I think about a lot of the people that I get to work with, they're more than just colleagues. These are people that I consider to be, you know, real true family members. And yeah, like, I definitely remember, you know, now that we're looking back, well, one of the things I think Michael alluded to that I'll say, I'm talking all over town about it, even though I'm not supposed to be, is that All About Evil is finally getting a proper re-release, and it's going to be streaming, and it's coming out on a Blu-ray that Severin's doing. And
So excited.
Yeah. And they've
Severin, that's amazing.
Yeah. They've been doing a beautiful, like, job with the film, and they've got a documentary that they're doing that a bunch of us were just shot for. And again, probably not supposed to say this, but you know, I feel like, well, whatever, it's my movie. They brilliantly, I said to David Gregory at Severin, you know, Michael Verratti, you should talk to him, because he has these incredible journals from when we went on tour. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that we couldn't include when we put out the movie the first time, because of course it hadn't happened yet, you know? And he said, oh, well, let's talk about that. And so part of the Blu-ray is the inclusion of a booklet of Michael's diary entries with photos.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my God, gold. You're literally giving people gold.
Yes.
My goodness.
And I can't wait to reread all that. Cause, you know, for me, it's like, well, that I was living it. And I know Michael recently wrote, a new foreword to those writings, like, so it's with the perspective, which I haven't read yet. So, like, again, selfishly, I can't wait to buy my own Blu-ray.
My mouth is literally like agape, and I have goosebumps.
Mine too. I'm so excited. Coolest. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I'll tell you, reading those travel logs, because how we did it back in the day, just for context, is after each stop, we would publish the entry on peacheschrist.com, and which the section of the site that housed those entries is now defunct and is not available to people. So a lot of these I wrote and we shared with readers, and then I haven't seen them in 13 years. So when this happened, I had to dig in. So, you know, it's true, Peaches hasn't seen any of them in a long time. I sat and read all of them, and obviously David Gregory has now seen them. And it was just sort of wild, because some things reading it, I vividly remember as if they happened yesterday. And there are other things that I'm like, oh, that did happen. What? And so it just was a true document of how bizarre and unique and fun this adventure was. And, you know, Peaches and I frequently talk about kind of the films and filmmakers that we have in common. And I can't impress upon listeners enough that the fact that a rolling roadshow with a horror film happened in 2010 is so singular and unique and special, because the likes of William Castle or Herschel Gordon Lewis or Ted B. Michaels, they used to do that back in the day. And then with the commodification of theaters, with just the changing market, we stopped getting that, so that we were able to go on the road and do this thing, thanks to Joshua and his movie, that our heroes did is mm-hmm. so fucking special that I'm so glad people get to kind of discover what that was like through this new release.
Making history, y'all. This is so very, very cool. I cannot believe we got the scoop, Julia.
Yes, I am shaking with excitement. You can't see my little hands waving around, but I assure that they are. So then how did we come together and decide that you wanted to join forces for Midnight Mass?
The podcast.
Well, I, you know, as any of us know, and I believe you were not in this boat, but I was in the boat of being an entertainer who did not yet have a podcast when the pandemic hit. So
Wait, what?
Yes. Unheard of.
So it became...
They just hand those out.
Yeah. It became a bit of a requirement because, one, I had wanted one for a long time because doing, actually being Peaches physically is quite exhausting. So the idea of an audio format where I get to be Peaches, but nobody has to see what I look like when I'm Peaches, was very attractive to me. And then, of course, with the pandemic, I did actually work on a storytelling podcast that I did with my drag daughter, Jinx Monsoon, and our dear friend, Ben De La Creme, and our friend, Major Scales. And that was very much an old-timey radio show. And I'll say that...
Oh, please tell us about that.
It's called...
What's the name of that?
It's called WQUR, Queer Quarantine Radio. And we put out two episodes, two out of three. The third one we have not yet put out. And what we learned was, oh my God, this is so much fucking work, you know?
Yes.
Because we were scripting these different shows and recording them in characters and then doing Foley sound design. I mean, like really making little movies without visuals every, you know, whatever. So it was just a lot of work. And so I learned a lot from that. And I thought, I want to do a podcast about, you know, something that like basically kind of go back to my roots of early Peaches and make it less about what is going to work from a monetizing point of view. Because I realized that that's a really uphill battle, but more what's going to work for me to stay interested. And so Midnight Mass seemed like the obvious choice during, you know, I couldn't do in-person movie events. I also couldn't any longer screen the truly cult weird things that I used to be able to screen at Midnight Mass. So when I talk about the audience of San Francisco in the early days, I could actually pull hundreds of people to come to a screening of something like The Bad Seed or, you know, William Castle's Homicidal. Those days are long gone, right? Like exhibition, that's just not how it works anymore. People don't watch movies that way anymore. They're not, you know, I can put on an event screening. I can still do event screenings. But the really, truly weird, rare cult stuff is very hard to fill a house with. But I could do a podcast where, with my friend Michael, you know, we could really dive in and indulge in our love of these movies. And what I think sets our podcast apart a little bit is that it really is focused on fandom and the cult of things. Why is this thing cult? Both from the point of view of the people who maybe made the movie or are in the movie, as well as just fans, people who love the movies. You know, how did this movie change your life? Why did this movie become your religion? So that's really the stuff that we look at.
This is your podcast is everything I love about film in like a podcast form.
Oh.
Because to me, cult film is the best because, I worked in a movie theater for years, right? And the most amazing feeling ever is when you're in a room full of people who want to be there. And obviously at midnight, you know, all the people want to be there because they're coming out at this, you know, this hour. And to have an audience of hundreds of people cheering at this movie and really being invested is one of the best feelings in the world. When you've programmed it, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That feeling is great. And also Michael and I were collaborating on these other projects, like we mentioned earlier. And so I knew that I wanted... Also, Michael did a genius podcast on his own. That's the other thing I should mention. Like,
Yes, he did. Dead for Filth is incredible.
Yeah, Michael...
We love Dead for Filth.
at the end of the day, when the history of queer horror is sort of told, I hope Michael gets the credit for creating the first really queer horror-focused podcast, because he was so early in doing that. And I don't know, it just seemed like the natural fit. Like, Michael and I should be doing this. And it is a lot of work, as the two of you know, but I really enjoy it. I do wish we could monetize it better.
You and us both.
Yes, I know. We know all about it.
The podcaster's conundrum.
Yes.
We are but poor artists. We're going to do a thing. And, well, we're still but poor artists. But It's fine. We love it too.
Yeah, because Terry and I, you know, we would talk about these things anyway. And so we're just kind of letting people into a conversation that of genuine passion, because we love to talk about these things. And if people want to listen, then that's wonderful. And I think it's, you know, that best friend vibe that people can really pick up on, because it's just easy to have a really normal, natural, funny conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love the conversations you guys have at Midnight Mass. As you know, I am a super, super, super duper fan. I just really love that you help reconnect people to why they love those movies in the first place. I think that's something that comes out from your show. And I really love your reverence you have for art, you know, and just like the joy of it and the gift that it is. And you all have chosen a movie for us.
Before we do, we have to mention you were just on their show, man.
What?
Yes. Can we not talk about that? Hello.
Wait, what? Oh my God. Well,
Terry stopped by to celebrate Drop Dead Gorgeous with us, and you brought the worship. I mean, you talk about our reverence, but your love of that movie was so, loud and proud. We couldn't have asked for a better guest. And I think it really speaks to what Peaches was talking about. For us, the fun of celebrating cult movies is we're also not relegated to a genre. Cult can be so many things, right? Mm-hmm. We can celebrate Drop Dead Gorgeous or Anti-Mame and then turn into the world of horror and look at something like Dream Warriors or Carrie. And we're discovering new cult films all the time because there are different cults for different films. And so to find people like you, Terry, and like you, Julia, and I know, Julia, inevitably you will be on the show, that celebration is really what makes us want to keep coming back. Because even if once in a while we come across a movie that Peaches and I are like, okay, this is cult. Is it our particular brand of cult? Maybe, but we're not as like hyped as another week. We end up becoming hyped because of the people who come to celebrate with us. And that's what makes it fun, because we connect with that. We get that. We understand what it means to be so in love with a movie that it's part of your DNA. And when we get to talk to people who light up to, you know, like talk about the most smartest film that you know, in their catalog, that's a gift.
Oh, truly. You guys, like, even you guys, can I just say, even your episode recently on Madonna's Truth or Dare, like, literally changed my life.
Oh, really?
I was in my car listening along and like crying, because like, if you listen to our episode, we got to interview the wonderful Julie Brown, yes. You know, and talked about Medusa and everything, and we both have a story about getting like shunned by Madonna separately and like changing us. And so, because I was so obsessed with Truth or Dare, I did in my middle school, I did an air band. It was, I called it Another Shade of Vogue, and I got to be Madonna. Yeah. Oh, and I like, you know, yeah, super, super fan. And it was because my friends and I would try to like sneak watching that movie, and you like doing that episode reconnected me to why I loved her so much. And I was like, oh yeah, she is a bitch. And you guys talked about that. And it just was like, oh yeah, we all know she is, but she can still be, you know, a wonderful entertainer, which she is and has done so many wonderful things. So yeah. I think the power of cinema, and then also just talking about it again, though, and just those reminders of like those pieces of joy that you guys help us reconnect to. I love so much.
Yeah. Well, and again, and one other thing before we move on, Terry is the reason we did Drop Dead Gorgeous. It was her suggestion. And not only was it a great suggestion and were you a great guest, but it may have been one of the fastest listened to episodes we've ever dropped. Oh, like, it went crazy right away. So, you know, thank you, Terry. Thank you.
You're so welcome. People love that movie. I had friends text me and call me when they saw that we were talking about it, I hadn't talked to in a long time, because they were so excited, to hear me talk with you all, but also just like that movie. And my best friend, who I talked about a lot in that episode, messaged me right away, and she's like, oh my God, this is our movie. I'm so glad you did it. So thank you.
Of course. Yeah.
You guys have a movie, though, that you've suggested for us in a turn of events. You get to talk with us about this crazy bonkers movie from 1989. You have brought to us all The Society.
Yes, I had never seen Society. I will tell you all that I almost watched this movie with my mom.
Oh, thank God you did it.
I was so close to watching this with my mom, and I was like, you know what? Something tells me I better not, because whenever I'd never seen it, but whenever I'd mentioned it to someone, I'd be like, Society, and they'd be like, O. And it was just in that O that I knew there was something about this movie. So I was like, okay, maybe I better not. And then I was like, oh my God, when I was watching it, I would have turned it off so early. I would have been so embarrassed.
Well, I have to tell you, a thought occurred to me as I was finishing up this movie in preparation for the episode that to throw it back to the last time I was on Horror Movie Survival Guide, there's a synergy here because the producer of From Beyond, which is the movie that I talked about last time, Brian Yuzna is the director of Society.
Yay.
Which, of course, we did From Beyond last time because Julia and I met essentially working for Stuart Gordon. And there's this, like, you know, this general Stuart synergy that I love every time we get together. So, in the, you know, here we are talking about the spirit of collaborative friendships. Brian Yuzna and Stuart Gordon made many, many great things together. We've talked about all of these things. So I just had to bring it up. I had to bring up Stuart and I had to bring up the connection.
Anytime. Anytime. Now, we love hearing more about Stuart anytime.
I love that man. I miss that man.
Yeah.
So this film was written by Zeph E. Daniel, a.k.a. Woody Keith, written also by Rick Fry and directed by Brian Yuzna, who they all worked together again on The Bride of the Reanimator. And so this was a collaboration that would continue on for many years. The tagline for this movie is, "The rich have always fed off the poor. This time it's for real." I like it.
Oh, yeah, that's the truth. That's a good tagline, too, because that is straight up what happens. Dear goodness.
So made you want to pick this film in particular?
Well, what's funny is Peaches and I were actually together at my apartment trying to come up with movies. And this one kept coming up. I think that you and I, Peaches...
Michael's obsessed with it.
I am. But I also think that we share this interest in splatstick comedy,
That's true.
I don't know that this movie is particularly funny, but it's also like so sticky and shocking that you can't help but laugh a little bit.
And it's just so weird. It's just so, I mean, I think it has elements of things that we know and love. And so, like, I was thinking about it in preparation for today's call, because I will say this, Michael, you did suggest it, and I was like, oh yeah, that's that movie that I don't even think of a lot of times because I don't even know what category to put it in. And I was watching, you know, I rewatched it for the podcast, and then I was thinking about, you know, what movies it's kind of like, and I was thinking, okay, so it's a little bit Stepford Wives, it's a little bit Rosemary's Baby. In more modern ways, maybe it's a little bit Get Out. It's got, it's got these things, but it's so uniquely its own fucked up thing, you know, that I think it's just one of those movies. Like, the 80s were this time where movies like this could actually get financed and made. And I don't think we live. I mean, I was thinking about it. I was like, besides maybe Psycho Goreman, you know, the movies like this sort of tone, this sort of bizarre kind of movie, it just doesn't get made this way anymore.
Yeah.
No.
I think that it'll probably come back around, right? Like, I feel like the people who grew up on this kind of movie are going to get to a point where they're going to be making movies and it'll seem similar to this. I feel like it all kind of comes around that sort of way.
You know what's interesting?
Influence. Mm-hmm, go ahead.
Is when I was watching this time, because it's true, I was the impetus for this selection, and I do love this movie. Peaches is right. I'm mildly obsessed with it. But it had been a while since I saw it. And watching it now in sort of this like post A24 era that we're in, there was a part of me that's like, huh, if this was made today, it probably would be an A24 movie because it is not structured at all like the 80s horror movies that we know. It's not like kill, you know, intensity. It all is this kind of like slow burn to this bizarre finale. And I think that there's something unique about that, especially at this time.
Agreed. I mean, this is the joy of when I watch a movie, I try to not know anything about it. So I went in completely blind. I really knew nothing. So to watch something like this unfold and like the joy of how, I mean, we got hats off right away, Screaming Mad George. The effects, like, this movie is not a movie without these effects, because these effects are killer.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. My God. like phenomenal. And they were, I was thinking, I was like thinking of the movie Slither, and like you said, Get Out, Peaches, same thing of like those, seeing the influences to this day of that ultimate gore and the makeup and all that stuff too. And this is just truly disgusting, but seeing that kind of body, like Cronenberg-y, like movement out of like, you know, Sister Jen's shoulder, she's getting ready to go out for her party that night or her coming out party. Just already had my skin crawling literally as I watched her skin crawl. So hats off to the effects in this film.
The effects are incredible. And I think the other reason, and Michael and I talk about this a lot, and I actually talk about this, I was just talking about this the other day in relation to something that came up with our new show at Terror Vault. We're doing it, we're developing a new show called The Summoning. And it was suggested, how should I say this? Like there was a character, we need a killer, kind of a murderer character. And because of the environment we're working in, someone said, well, he could be a janitor. And I said, you know, I'm so tired of the trope. And we work with tropes. I mean, don't get me wrong. But there's some tropes that are actually problematic, which are that poor people are dangerous or that working class people are more likely to be killers or things. And so I love the films where, like Get Out and like Society, where the dangerous people are the rich white people, because I do think that in many ways that is a much more realistic narrative of the things mm-hmm. we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. I mean, it's the billionaires of this world that are the most terrifying people of all, you know, right? Yep. Like they're the ones actually fucking everything up. And I think this movie is a fun way to go to really point the finger at and make a movie about like, yeah, this is probably what they're doing. You know, this is the kind of shit that they're doing.
And yeah, I mean, even the like news cycle, like over these last few weeks too, they've been talking about like Madison Cawthorn was like saying those people in the government were going through orgies or whatever. And yes, like saying all this stuff was
you're
happening.
Right.
And, I was like, and then I watched this and I was like, oh, okay. Okay. So I don't think he's fully wrong. Like maybe stuff's going down at the Capitol that we don't necessarily know about, or there's some sort of cabal. Now I'm feeling like a conspiracy theorist. But
hey, man,
you read
about MK Ultra, you will read about some fucked up shit as well.
Well, I mean, there's an opening in Washington.
Hey.
In more ways than one.
Hey.
A big old opening.
I will say this movie had me sold because it had the Julia trifecta in here. We had 80s hot boys in shorty shorts, stripy yep. socks, and Converse. Mm. So I was like, well, I'm a happy girl. That's really all it takes.
Wow, we have the same fetish.
Yes.
We should do a whole episode on that. We could do sleepaway camp.
We could.
And yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes, please.
In a heartbeat.
And then I have to do a lot of research and watch the movies. Oh, no.
Right. Stripey socks of the damned.
Oh, my God. Oh, my. Yes. I love it. You already named it. I love it. Okay, perfect. We have a whole series happening. And Billy Warlock. Can we talk about Billy Warlock as Bill Whitney?
Yes.
This character, this sad boy, this very intense, just idiot beauty. Like, can we talk about this? Like,
yes.
Oh my God.
Well,
his performance.
I mean, truly, he sells this discombobulation in a really wonderful way, because when the movie starts and you know that he's the son of these like super affluent people, there's kind of that moment where you're like, well, why should we feel sorry for him? But of course, as the movie goes on and you're like, oh, he's sort of cattle to these people, mm-hmm. like truly, it showcases his sort of just being out of joint of the world that he lives in. And I think he communicates it really well.
Yeah, they definitely,
I agree.
Yeah, they definitely set it up. Well, I mean, I love how the parents and the daughter, they look like they're from the same family. It all makes sense. He looks like he's in a different, he's in a sitcom or something, about a different family entirely.
Yeah.
That all makes sense. And his performance is that sort of like the tough, sweet 80s kind of macho guy, but who's got, you know, but who has his heart's in the right place. Like, I felt a little bit like it veered, like the one part that made me a little uncomfortable was where the nerd is debating him in the high school scene. And he's kind of a bully in that scene, mm-hmm. you know, where you don't know that he's running for president and he's making fun of the way the kid looks or whatever. And the woman, Carissa or whatever, is like doing the Sharon Stone like leg, you know, distraction.
Basic Instinct.
Basic Instinct. Also Kathleen Turner and Mommy, not Mommy Dearest, and
Serial Mom.
She employs that tactic as
I would love to see Kathleen Turner in a Mommy Dearest like stage show.
Oh, she'd be amazing. I did get to see her do Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
And, oh my God. Yeah, so tell me about that.
It was amazing. You know, she was doing in San Francisco. And so we got to see her. And apparently she had never seen the Liz Taylor movie, which seems crazy. But I will say this, she did make it her own. She definitely was not doing, you know, Liz's version. But yeah, this character, he carries this whole film. Like if he wasn't convincing enough or he wasn't good. And then Michael, you got to talk about his friend, because Michael has some revealing to do about his personal connection to this movie.
What, Milo?
Yeah. So Evan Richards, who plays Milo, is actually somebody that I know. he and I met at our mutual friend Darren Stein's drag race parties that Darren used to host pre-pandemic. And it was just one of those things where I didn't really realize that he was the actor in this movie until later. He's always been quite lovely. I keep up with him. You know, he sends me social media messages all the time. When he made his new short film, he sent it to me. But it's funny because, like, we met, we connected, we kept in touch. And then it was one of those things that, like, later I was, like, watching Down and Out in Beverly Hills. And I was like, oh, that kid looks like a young version of Evan. And I was like, oh, shit, it is Evan. And then, of course, he's also in this movie. And I think he's so adorable in this movie. And I love that.
I thought this was a Julia boy in this movie. He is adorable.
Yeah. And he has this, like, very lovely friendship with Billy Warlock's character that you don't see these kind of, like, caring male friendships in the 80s very often. Like, I think Night of the Creeps is the only other example.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Yeah. Because usually there's always that weird, like, toxic masculinity, like, you know, no, we got to get the girl. And there is a little bit of that here, but ultimately it's their friendship and his caring so much for his friend that helps them escape at the end.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And I just have to point out that the back of Billy's car said Hoops, his license plate. And I think he has to go through a lot of hoops to get out of there. Boom, boom, boom. But the love of his friend really does drive him through. And I love that he keeps following him and, like, you know, challenges him to snap out of it. But then also once he realizes how deep he is in, like, helps him out there and runs in to save him. It's a beautiful moment and also terrifying.
Yeah. Yes.
Into the orgy. Into the orgy.
Oh my God. Don't, can we not use the word orgy for this?
Would you prefer, Julia, that we call it the shunting?
Yes, I would, actually. And I looked up, I would. I would, because I looked up what the medical definition of shunt was, just for your viewing, your listening pleasure. Uh-huh. A shunt is a hole or small passage which moves or allows movement of fluid from one part of the body to another. Doesn't it make it even more gross now?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know that that's for my listening pleasure, but thank you.
Yes, we get to hear my voice saying.
Oh my God, Julia, you reading medical terms to me any day. Beautiful.
No, Mike, saying orgy
Tis also an orgy because it's the copulation, right? They call it the copulation will happen. Right?
Well, it's definitely suggested that, like, at least the mom, dad, and the daughter got freaky.
Right.
Yep.
Yes, but they go into another room to do it, which is confusing, right? It's like, why go into the other room if you can be alone all the time in your own house, but the fun is happening over here.
Sure. Well, maybe then instead of orgy, it's an orgiastic situation. I don't know if that's splitting hairs, but...
This is what we live for.
They're just splitting hairs about... Or that mom, Carissa's mom, is also splitting hairs. What's up with her and the hair? Can we talk about her a little bit, too?
Oh, my God.
Can we talk about this drag performance she's giving?
Yeah, I was going to say, I sent Michael a still image of her just last night, just because... Oh, and I also posted one in my story, because I was just so obsessed with her. But I didn't reveal anything. I just posted a picture of her.
It's fine.
But it sent me on a journey to find out, like, who this was. I turned to my partner Neha at one point you know, as the poor Nihat did not have any interest in watching this. And we were actually watching something else. And I was like, hey, I need to watch this movie, Society. I think you'll like it, you know, and kind of duped him into watching this film. And but then it was that thing where I could tell he was sort of looking at TikTok or something, but like one eye was still on the TV, you know. But I said,
you can't look away from.
Exactly. I said to him, I'm like, I honestly don't know if that's a man or not. Like, I didn't know if the performer, it was so convincingly drag that I had to go look her up.
Same.
Yeah. So she, it's not a man, it's an actress. And she was in a few movies, not very many. But what a strange performance, and just the styling of it, you know, like it, she was styled to look like a drag queen, you know?
Well, and when Peaches sent me the photo, it immediately caused she and I to both chat about the fact that it's such a bizarre choice. One that is never explained. They never like give us any sort of like, and here's what's up with Clarissa's mom. They're just like, no, she's just kind of got weirdo, like, Leslie Hall makeup and is eating hair.
Yeah, I was waiting for some sort of tie-in because of like, well, maybe like Clarissa had to like buy in some way. Her family wasn't really fully rich or something, because they didn't seem as rich just based on their house and how this mom was acting. It was so weird. I just wondered if it was like a whole nother like sideline or side story that just got completely cut. I don't know.
Oh my God, they're nouveau riche.
Well, yeah. I think you're right. I can't imagine that there wasn't some version of the script that explained that, because it just was too much to not come from someplace, you know, to not have had an explanation. And I bet like either the movie was too long, or, you know, something happened where they cut some sort of moment that would explain it better, because it's too random.
I'm glad that it's not there. I'm glad that it isn't. It makes it even creepier. You're just like, I don't know what the deal is, man. They're never going to explain it. No one ever knows. Like, it's just that kind of, that's the horror of that in itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, she was just not quite right with the rest of them, but I loved her. She was probably one of my favorite characters, I think.
Well, and
so, I mean, as far as like disgusting finales go, how hard did this rank? Does this movie rank for you?
I mean, it's up there, right?
Yeah, it's definitely up there.
And Peaches, I am sure, Michael, I am sure you have both watched this at midnight with a crowd, hearing them go bananas, right?
I never have. I would love to, though, but no, I never have. I've only ever seen it on VHS as a kid.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever seen this at a midnight screening. I have been at screenings of this movie, and yes, people react for sure, because it's just so bizarre. I mean, and the thing is it's one of those movies that I think is always shocking. What I love about it is, even though you know it's coming, once you've seen it the first time, it's still like unsettling. There's never a moment where you get fully desensitized to society, and I dig a horror movie that leaves you like that.
I feel like I just want to watch a movie where it's just people's faces watching that scene who have never seen it before, and just still like it's still on their face, like an Andy Warhol short, but it's just people's faces watching the end scene of Society.
It's very.
Yes, no.
Yeah, I would love it, because it's I just, you know, what's funny is I had a visceral reaction to the opening credits because I remembered the finale. Like, once you've seen the movie, it never leaves you, right? And so the opening credits of this film sort of foreshadow what the end is going to be, and you know, you definitely see some of the body horror, but it's very out of focus, and you can't really tell what's going on. But I was like watching it going, oh shit, I don't know if I'm up for this, you know, because I remember I knew how it ended. I will say that my brain sort of to deal with it, it sort of goes to like, oh wow, I wonder how Screaming Mad George did that, or, you know, you know, I have to adjust sometimes, because this body horror is so it's so effective, it's so specifically connected to juices and moisture and flesh. Ooh. And, you know, and sex, and also incest, you know, so it's like they've got layers of taboos, and you've got like, I mean, spoiler alert, obviously, we're spoiling a lot, but like, you've got an old man chomping on a cigar, which there's something so visceral about that, who then fists a person. It is crazy. It's crazy extreme, I mean, you know.
Did the experience turn you inside out?
Wow.
Wait, now, Peaches, I have to ask, because you said Nihat was watching it with you. Yes. Once the ending hits, what happens with Nihat? I have to know.
I think he's sitting. Did you watch the whole movie last night?
A big part of it.
I think he tuned out. Okay, he just said a big part of it. No, there was a point where the end started to kick into high gear, and he tuned out. So he did give up on it at some point.
Fair.
That is hilarious.
I can see if you're not an ooze hound, I think that this might be a lot for somebody. But I think what you were saying, Peaches, about you look at the artistry of it, right? And that's how I love to look at horror movies that way. Is you go, yes, there's this effect, and especially with practical effects, but how did they do that, right? And you think about how many people it takes to be under there who are manipulating this all at the same time, and this, you know, what it is to build something that huge. Because you think about, you know, I think about the effects in American Werewolf or the effects in, you know, The Thing, and like, they're beautiful, but they're small-ish, right? Small-ish. We got heads and dogs and things, but then this is like, lots, huge. And like, I don't think I've ever seen one this gigantic. I can't even
gelatinous.
Think about how
it's
it is. All of these
gelatinous
things.
Thing. Yeah. Unbelievable.
With snouts and shunting and all sorts of disgusting. We've said so many disgusting words in this episode.
I don't want to hear any of these words again. I'm banning it. When Peaches started saying moist, I about lost my shit over here. But so we do a rating system here at Horror Movie Survival Guide for these movies. And I'm pretty sure I already know what this one is, because I already gave it to it literally from the first scene, I think, before the movie started. But I would love for you to join us with this. So we have a rating system for gore factor, and then we do a movie rating. So gore factor first. We have 5 ratings that we can choose from. 1, not enough blood to fill a Dixie cup. 2, a puddle of blood. 3, enough blood to gross out their average viewer. And 4, a bathtub of blood. Or 5, run for the barf bag. I'm guessing just based on this last few minutes of conversation, we probably are all going to come to a consensus very easily. I'm guessing this movie is a
5.
Run for the barf bag. I mean,
I would say it's a 5 too. But you know what's interesting, and I did some reading on this, is this movie is drippy and gooey and ooey, but there's actually not a lot of blood in this film.
Almost
it's got
none.
Every other bit of fluid. And I read that Brian Yuzna did that on purpose, because he was worried that if there was also blood during the shunting, that would earn it an NC-17, and he wanted to avoid that.
Ah, so it's kind of like that thing like Texas Chainsaw, right? Where like everyone like sees it in their mind, like, oh, it was really bloody. You're like, actually, there's no blood in that movie. They don't show you anything, right? Like, very, very little. So I think it's that kind of thing here where you look back and like, oh, well, there's so much fluid, there has to be blood involved. But then actually,
and just the guts of the inside out like thing, which is like worms, though.
Yeah.
And then the fake blood from Petrie's like death with his little like neck getting sliced and stuff. And then poking out a face, but it's not blood of Blanchard in like the coffin.
But it's still running for the barf bag, right?
I still think it's 5. Still,
like, I could see how this is nauseating.
I have to say though, despite his like really gruesome inside out death, I've never been like less concerned about a character dropping than Tim Ferguson. Like the end of Tim Ferguson kind of earned just like a big like meh. Ted. It was Ted, right? I was like, whatevs.
And I would say that your rating system is really interesting, because we do associate gore with blood. And this is a film that actually I almost think, because we're so tuned into blood and gore and buckets of blood, I mean, that in a way, part of what makes this movie even grosser or more disturbing might be the lack of it. And it's just
Blanchard's the only one, though. Blanchard's death, there was a lot of blood.
That's true. That's true.
And he steps into it with the I'm just thinking back, I was like, with the glass and the blood. But
well,
other than
like
that,
the hospital, the sheets they wrap him in, you know, when he's gurney. Yeah.
The gurney. Mm-hmm.
But I actually think it's still run for the barf bag, because seeing the flesh, the oily flesh, to me is just as gross.
Agreed.
Long live the new flesh.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So we also have movie ratings. We got 0 to 5 chainsaws. We got 1 if you're desperate. 2 barely qualifies as a horror film. 3 seen worse, seen better. 4 not too shabby. And 5 fantastic-orical. Don't know about you guys, but this is a fantastic-orical. I couldn't even say my own word. 5.
Yeah. You made up this rating, Julia. So yes, fantastic-orical. I agree. It's a full 5 for me. This movie was shocking, upsetting, and beautiful all at the same time. Agreed. Just like we like it.
I mean, you know my answer. I picked the movie. So.
I think it's a 5. So then yes. We have one last question for you that we ask all our guests, which is we need a tip for horror movie survival from you.
Based so on this movie, right?
Yeah. How would you survive this movie? Mm-hmm. If you were Billy, maybe, or one of these people.
Because I've been on the show before, I anticipated this question. So I will say that my tip for survival that you can add to the book based on society is also something that I think Peaches and I try and extol every week on Midnight Mass, and it's be true to you.
Ooh. Mine would be that money isn't everything. No trust fund is worth having to survive an incest orgy with your parents and sister. So run away.
You know, I'm going to take that tip and I'm going to take that to heart. I'm not going to do that. So I appreciate, I'm going to be true to myself and I am not going to be worried about that money if I have to go through that kind of an orgy.
I know so much. Many people were like on the precipice until that moment.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like, oh, I just needed the wisdom of Peaches Christ. May she, yes, give us all the peace. Peace from Peaches. Thank you so much, y'all. Oh my
Absolutely.
Gosh.
Please. Thank you.
Please give us all of your plugs. We want to know what you're doing and where we can find you.
Yes, internet's everything.
Well, if this is coming out on May 9th, 2022, then in less than a week on May 15th, the Chainsaw Awards presented by Fangoria will be airing. And Ooh. I had the distinct pleasure of writing the whole show.
No way!
What? Yes, Michael!
So I was very, very thrilled to be asked by Fangoria to do this. And something that now Peaches and I both can reveal is we're also presenters in the show. So you can see us there giving an award away. I don't know how much more I can say. And if for some reason by May 9th, Fangoria has not announced this yet, well, there you go. You're welcome.
beyond, so amazing. I'm so cool.
Beyond that, as of today, I have officially locked picture on my latest short film, Infested Hearts. It reunites me with Ben Bauer, who has been the leading man in many of my films. We briefly were apart thanks to this little thing that happened over the last 2 years. And then we got back together, made a movie with ooey gooey crawly things. and I'm very excited. Ooh. That will be rolling out in festivals this summer. Obviously, Midnight Mass comes out every Wednesday. Gosh, I feel like there's a lot. Peaches, what do you got?
Well, I'm shortly after this podcast is released, I jump on a plane and I go to England, where I'm doing my Return to Grey Gardens show with my drag daughter, Jinx Monsoon. So we'll
oh
be doing
my gosh.
I want to go to England. We want to go see this.
Yes.
Oh, God. So doing, let's go, Julia.
You should join us. Yes. So,
oh, my God.
That's happening. And then, of course, as we discussed, All About Evil being re-released in June with screenings presented by Midnight Mass. And also working hard on the new Terror Vault event, which is my immersive theatrical haunted attraction in San Francisco. So between peacheschrist.com and terrorvault.com, and then of course all the social media stuff, you can find out more.
Oh my goodness. Amazing. I want all of it.
I know, same. I'm obsessed. Well, Julia and I met on the way to England, Peaches. That's like how we know each other.
Oh, fabulous.
We did a year abroad together and we were sitting next to each other on the airplane. So in the 90s. Amazing. So this is so very cool. And I'm obsessed with Grey Gardens. We'll have to talk about this again later.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you guys
please.
So much for joining us today. Thank you, listeners, for listening. You can follow us on all the things as usual, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and all that stuff. You can also check out our Patreon, our Teespring store for merch. And please follow our wonderful guests. They're freaking fantastic. And thank you all for listening. And we'll see you again next week for another fabulous podcast collaboration. So happy to interview some of our favorite podcasters out there. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Peaches.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. Horror Movie Survival Guide is independently produced by Terry Gamble, Julia Marchesi, and Sierra Ryan. Hey, that's me. If you would like to support the show, find us on patreon.com/horrormoviesurvivalguide.